Now it's Teague on the arc, right side. Turner screens, pick and roll in the lane. Turner there, count it, and put him on the line. A chance for a three-point play.
Miles Turner took that one into the hoop.
Welcome back. This is the Sideline Guys podcast. I'm Pat Boylan alongside Jeremiah Johnson. It is week three. We got to this point without having to talk right immediately after a really tough loss, but I guess that'll test our ability as podcasters.
That's right, Pat. You know, I've had a lot of fun with the podcast thus far. I've enjoyed listening to some of the reactions from some of the fans and some of the folks on Reddit, some of the Twitter followers as well. So for this program, it is Election Day. So happy Election Day to everyone. I thought maybe we could mix things up a little bit and share some of our political news and views. I see you have a sticker on. It says, "My vote, my voice." You voted today.
I did vote today. A hats off to the 10th South Meridian 10th Street Sacred Heart Church. I got in there, and there was two people in there and five people ready, and I got in and out in 5 minutes, and that's because it took 4.5 minutes for me to cast my ballot. And it was so close, I was able to walk back here to work. It was like a 15-minute walk. I did it during my lunch break, and I was extremely pleased because I heard all these stories about long lines, whether it was early voting or day of voting. So the extent of where I'll go from a political perspective is that Pat's polling place was kept great again. Because that's two in a row where I haven't had to wait. The other one was in Muncie back when I was in school. So,
and the extent of my voting discussion would be I saw signs inside the Spectrum Center last night that said vote Batum and vote Kemba. And those who voted for them were happy because they won last night. And I'm not going to get into any political discussion. I've not particularly enjoyed anything about the election season. And I did not enjoy last night's Pacers-Hornets game.
Yeah, it makes it an interesting kind of, you and I were talking about this, we both work for a team, we both grew up in this state rooting for, this team before we ever got here. So there's an interesting kind of, you know, line that you and I think constantly have to find, and that is people understand this is, you know, the team that we're working for, but there's a conflict of interest in there too that it's important, I know, to you and important to me to treat, you know, the whole thing fairly, to not come across, as Eddie White likes to say, Pollyanna, and, you know, to try to find that mix of, you know, yes, this is our team, you know, this is where we work, we grew up with this team, but at the same point, when they play poorly, we don't want to sit here and try to misguide, you know, what happened last night. And the truth is, last night, we're recording this on a Tuesday, in Charlotte, was, you know, probably one of the bigger struggles the Pacers have had in quite some time.
It's something that I always have to think about. When the game ends, and if there's no walk-off interview, which only happens after a Pacers win, there's usually about 90 seconds between the time Chris and Quinn sign off the air and I come on the air for the post-game show. And for the road games, it's always a little more complicated because I've got to get plugged in with the courtside microphones and try to find the camera that is sometimes up in the rafters and look up and then make sure I can hear the producer, Ken Softman, and get an idea of where we're going, because the postgame show is a little bit unscripted. The pregame show is much like a newscast in that we really know the directions we're going, not necessarily everything that we're going to say, but the order we're going to bring up topics. And for the postgame show, you can't really decide what you're going to do until one, the outcome is determined, which last night, obviously, the start of the fourth quarter, you pretty much had an idea Charlotte was going to win that game, but you kind of have to communicate with the producer. And so I don't have a lot of time sometimes to decide how I want to start the show and the things that I want to say, but the one thing that I try not to do is mislead or make excuses. And I think no one in this organization, I get a paycheck and it's from the Pacers. So that is something that I am a little bit careful that I don't want to make a personal attack, of course, and I never want to necessarily continue to kick somebody when they're down. But at the same time, I think anybody that works here wants a little bit of a fair story.
Sure.
And the truth story presented. So pretty much last night, it's come on the air and say, that wasn't good. Things need to be fixed. That was not as good as what we saw Saturday night against Chicago, and then begin at some point to let Chris and Quinn share their thoughts. Now, they've had, sometimes I feel for them, because they've had an entire fourth quarter where the action on the floor didn't really matter. Obviously, you saw Glenn Robinson the third and Joe Young get some minutes, and you'd like to see them perform. But they had a whole quarter to pretty much say what they thought, and then during the postgame show had to bring them back in and to get some additional commentary, all the while just basically filling time until we can hear from head coach Nate McMillan, because that's the person whose opinion matters most, and you really want to hear his thoughts on the situation. And he was pretty accurate in saying that it was night and day between Saturday and Monday. And he didn't have a lot of answers, but he had to look at the film and try to see what exactly is going on, because something isn't right now.
Well, I'm curious from your perspective, because for your job as the fans see, you're on location every road game. From on the radio side, we're in the studio, so there's sometimes nuances that I can't catch on the road that you might be able to catch. And certainly, where we are recording this right now, the Pacers are practicing. There's a closed door in between, about 30 feet away from us right now, and there's certainly much smarter basketball minds than us over there trying to figure it out. So I'm not necessarily talking an X's and O's thing here, but I mean, the numbers, they don't lie. The Pacers have been pretty good at home so far. They've had some struggles defensively, but they're 3-0, had their best game of the season easily against Chicago, and they've taken care of business here. On the road, it's been a completely different story, and the Brooklyn game, unfortunately, might be the best game of all of them, and they lost to a team that might finish last in the Eastern Conference in that game. Is there a vibe difference? What are you noticing? Is there anything you've noticed?
I just don't think there's a lot of confidence, because they haven't been able to do it successfully over a prolonged period of time. The Dallas game was good offensively, but really not good defensively. Even the win against the Lakers, now the Lakers have subsequently had some big wins, and you think maybe they're a little better than they showed that night. But I still watched that game, and I thought, how are the Lakers doing this offensively against a team that we have known for years to be really good defensively? So despite the one solid performance against Chicago, granted they were on short rest and maybe after the Pacers put them away they didn't really try to come back, by and large the defense has been a problem. So I think whenever there's a breakdown or there are two or three plays where somebody misses an assignment or an opponent knocks down two or three three-pointers, or we're seeing somebody get beat to the basket and then there's a foul and there's an and one, which felt like there were like 15 of those last night.
Five in the first half, I counted.
The frustration begins to set in, and I just don't think that they have an answer, so it's a little bit of helpless feeling, because you're hearing a lot of times, and I know we talked about this, that we get frustrated hearing them say we're not putting enough effort out there, there's not enough energy, and that seems to be a difficult reason to accept. But I also think that they don't have a lot of confidence, and they are getting their heads down a little bit. And I saw some frustration in the huddles, especially in the second half last night. The guys are upset. So you like to – I mean, you don't want them to be thinking this is okay, but I just don't think they have a lot of confidence right now that they can excel defensively until they do it for about a prolonged stretch or a week or so or three or four games.
Yeah, I think part of it is they're still trying to figure it out, and they don't totally know the answer. And the easy – I don't want to say the easy way out, but the automatic area you can go to is an effort thing. But I mean this in a positive perspective towards these guys. They haven't gone out there for four games and given no effort. It's early in the season. Everyone's amped up for the beginning of the games. I don't really see effort as an issue. But you've got a team who has been a top – five or so defensive team for a long time, and players like Paul George who have been part of that for a while, all of a sudden are witnessing their own team in the bottom five of that category, and it's stunning because it's happened quickly, and they're still trying to figure out exactly why that is. So I think they're kind of still searching for answers right now, and the good thing is, you know, we're still only seven games in. It's still very early in the season, and Dan Burke has been a part of nearly every good defensive team the Pacers have ever had, and Nate McMillan has been a head coach for double-digit years in this league. So they've got some history behind them, certainly. It's funny, you go back to a lot of the Pacers' good seasons, and they've gotten off to poor starts. You can at least, you know, hang your hat on that, but ultimately you don't want to get off to these slow starts, and you wouldn't have to, like, to reference the 93-94 season or any of those seasons like that. But it's been a reality. A lot of good Pacers teams have gotten off to poor starts. We're still way too early to know where this one might end. And there have been some good things, but I think a lot concerning here early on. And there's some time to figure it out, but at the same point, you can't dig yourself too deep of a hole like the Pelicans are doing.
That's true. And I think back to last year where the frustration was setting in from fans and from broadcasters alike with so many close losses. You see the Pacers get an opportunity, play well, have a chance to win a game, and not be able to execute down the stretch. I think it's probably worse what's happening right now because they're just not in some of these games. And it's so rare in the NBA to see – I mean, maybe it's not rare. It just feels rare because of the way the last week has gone where three of the four games were just – or three of the five games, I guess, the last three road games. They just were not close. And you don't like that feeling when you're starting a game after halftime thinking you almost have to play perfect just to have a chance to get back in the game. You think so many times in the NBA – you're within 10 in the fourth quarter, you're within 8, you can make a run, and it could be a one-possession game with 2 minutes of play. The Pacers, I don't remember all of the specific statistics, but last season, it, I think, led the league in late and close games. So we just haven't seen that this season. It's still early, but it is time to start to get a little bit concerned, and I think the guys are concerned. The coaches are concerned. They're searching for answers, but they are not giving up. At least they do have the 3 wins that you're talking about. And sure, this sets up for a really, really important 3 games in 4 days stretch, 2 against Philadelphia and then home against Boston.
Yeah, no doubt. And we can break down those opponents as we get a little bit later into the show. Something brought up on the television side, we brought it up on radio, we brought it up on this podcast last week, is you know what Stephanie White talked about with her team struggling right out of the gates trying to change pace. She said she thought it might be December or January before you saw a true look from this Pacers team. And while I certainly think that's true, I think we need to start seeing some signs of progress. And I'm not saying we haven't, but one of the disheartening things about the game on Monday night was because I think we saw what looked like and what might be some signs of progress against Chicago. They played better defense. Chicago was on a back-to-back, but I think that's overstated in this league, especially when you're on game 5 or whatever. I mean, these guys have had the whole season off. Game 5, I don't blame the back-to-back either for the Pacers' dominating loss or dominating win against the Bulls in either of those. I think it has a little bit of a factor. But I think it's fair as a fan to start wanting to see some progress here. And, you know, that might mean lowering the other team can be in the hundreds, but they're not in the 120s. And we saw some progress against Chicago, and I don't think we should just dismiss it because it went away on the road. But I think while it might not be until December or January where this team gets to where it wants to be, I think it's fair to start hoping for some progress and hoping for some progress sooner rather than later. And certainly they'll get a chance to do that. Philly will help here coming in twice soon. By the way, a thing I saw in the Ringer this morning I thought was interesting on Miles Turner. They did a story on a handful of these bigs and how they're kind of changing, you know, the dynamics. It's basically a story on Karl-Anthony Towns, Kristaps Porzingis, Miles Turner, maybe another guy or two in there. But they had a whole write-up which was very complimentary on Miles Turner, talking about how he's kind of slipped through the cracks a little bit because he wasn't a real high draft pick and he didn't play a ton of minutes his rookie year. But there's some really positive things to draw from this that I wanted to bring up. They talk about, you know, synergy and how he has 1.3 points possession out of the pick and roll. That's really good. And anyway, for those who want to see a more in-depth look at this, it's on the Ringer, and it's a really interesting story, I think, on just the evolution of the bigs. Turner, Porzingis, Karl-Anthony Towns, those guys can step back and hit the three. And I think if you're the Pacers, while the team evolution hasn't been where you want it to be, for the most part, I think Paul George looks – now, he didn't have a great night last night, but for the most part, I think he's looked more effective. I think Miles Turner looks like he's ready and taking another step. I think Thad has been about what you've expected him. Teague has struggled, but there's reason to believe he'll turn that around. We pretty much know what Monte Ellis' game is this year. From an individual standpoint, when you just look at what these guys have done and what they are, I think there's still a lot of reason to have a lot of promise for this team and a reason that a lot of – people were picking this team to win 50 games before the start of the season, and one of those is Miles Turner.
Yeah, if you looked at this roster in July and you were saying because of the players on this team, this could be a top four team in the East, then at 3-4, you should not necessarily throw in the towel or wave the white flag. It's just about getting, I think, and it's cohesiveness, it's togetherness, connectivity. That's some of the words that I think I've heard Nate McMillan use over the first couple of weeks. They certainly have the players. It's getting them to play well together. And Miles Turner, is going to have some moments where he's still learning. We've talked about this, I think, on each of the other two podcasts about learning exactly where he's supposed to be and what his role is as the five man. But the way that game started, it was really good offensively. He is so confident when he gets that ball from about 17 feet and knocks down that jumper that that's really something to build on. I think his low post game will improve even more when he's able to work with Al Jefferson throughout the course of an entire season. I think of Al Jefferson right now in a role as a teacher as much as he is a reserve big man, because he has so many nifty moves. He put one of the moves on Cody Zeller last night on the post, and Cody just smiled because he'd seen it so many times before in games playing with Al and in practice. And when I talked with Cody before the game, the first thing I said was, you know, what's it like to see Big Al again? He said, Big Al is awesome, and he just got a big grin. So I think that Big Al will continue to help Miles. He doesn't need any help with his outside shot. Maybe you just like to see a few more shots inside. He's blocking shots as well. I think it's just a little bit of learning, and I'm not smart enough to know where the breakdowns are with help side sometimes, if it's him or if it's Thaddeus. But I do look at this group, and Miles on the floor, Paul on the floor, Monte on the floor. Those three guys were on the floor a lot last year. So it's not an entirely new group. You're throwing in Jeff Teague, and you're throwing in Thaddeus Young, and you're basically taking out, for much of the time, Jan Mahinmi and George Hill. So you have to understand. I think Thaddeus is a good defender. I think he's good for the way the NBA is going right now. So I don't consider that a complete negative. You are going to have some problems in the backcourt by changing Jeff Teague for George Hill, and I think the thought going into the season was you'd have a better offense, so that'd make up for where you gave up a little bit more defensively. So I know you brought up Miles. I was just thinking a little bit more big picture still. Yeah. I think Miles is someone to still be excited about and to gauge and to watch his improvement, and that should be fun watching Joel Embiid consecutive games against Miles Turner.
It will be. And Embiid was part of this Ringer article too. Just kind of the evolution of the big man. Embiid hits the three, the center specifically. You mentioned Teague, and one stat that I found promising, and again, you're looking for, now that you're seven games in, you can find trends, and there's certainly ones that are promising. There's certainly ones you'd like to get better. The Pacers are fourth in the NBA in assists. This is an area where they haven't been great in for a while, and I wouldn't say it's necessary to have a good team, but at least I haven't checked this since the game on Monday, but going into that game on Monday, both Teague and Monte were in the top 20 in the league in assists per game, and the Pacers didn't have anybody in the top 20 last year. So it tells on offense, the ball's moving. I think we've seen a more effective Paul George. Might even throw out last night's game altogether because Teague only played 19 minutes, and it just wasn't a normal game. But when the Pacers have had their offense out for an extended period of time, I think the ball moves better. I think Teague has shown why they brought him here, even though he's not performing at peak efficiency yet. And Monte's shown that he's not going to be a chucker, that he's willing to be a team guy. We saw a couple games where he had like two shots in one game and four shots in another. So I think from an offensive perspective, there's a lot to like. The defense, it just has to get cleaned up. And what that is, we'll see if Nate McMillan has answers. A couple things that they talked about were slowing down just a little bit to let the defense kind of catch themselves and making things harder on the offense. So we'll see. They talked about communicating more. I'm trying to think all these answers we got in the locker room. C.J. Miles said they communicated a lot better against Chicago. But, you know, ultimately what's the saying? It's not an X's and O's. It's a something in Joe's.
Jimmy's
and Joe's. And so it's the guys on the floor.
But you're not going to change the Jimmy's and Joe's significantly.
Right.
During the course of a season, you need to have the Jimmy's and the Joe's.
So these guys have to figure
out. I'm not even sure if I got the names right. But
it's not X's. I think that's right. It's not X's and O's. It's Jimmy's and Joe's. I don't know. Last podcast, I butchered a math problem. So if we butchered that, it wouldn't be anything new. You brought up George Hill, though, and this is something that I enjoyed George's time here. I think every Pacers fan should have. It's interesting because you have, like, on Twitter, you have, like, two very different segments of Pacers fan. One is, oh, look what we gave up in George Hill. He's playing so well in Utah. And then the other is, yeah, but George Hill was terrible. And it's like, guys, it's somewhere in the middle. But
I do wonder if you look at the people who are just criticizing the trade, by and large, through 2 weeks, if you look at their timelines from last year, how much they were criticizing George.
The other thing nobody talks about with this trade, or very rarely about that trade, is Teague's 2 years younger. The Hill's 30 and Teague's 28. So if you offer, I don't want to speak for him, but if you offer Larry Bird that trade over again, he does it 100 times out of 100, even right now, even though George Hill's played great to start the season. But like we talked about in podcast one, these guys have two very different skill sets, and I don't think it matters which one you think is better. And I think I love personally watching George Hill play very well, and he's the current Western Conference Player of the Week. I don't think him playing well for any reason should negate a trade that happened. I think Teague is here. I think it's the right move, and I think he fit what the Pacers needed better. And I love watching George Hill and Gordon Hayward in a backcourt of Indiana guys over there in Utah playing well now that Gordon's back. And I love seeing what George can do when he has the opportunity to touch the ball more. The reality was he wasn't going to have the opportunity to touch it here as much as he was in Utah. Utah's a better fit for him. Teague is a better fit in Indiana. A trade can be a win-win, and I think this is going to be.
When the trade happened, I said that I thought it was good for the Pacers, but I also thought it was good for George, as you said, because I think George needed a fresh start. He needed a change of scenery. Despite being an Indianapolis guy who went to Broad Ripple High School and IUPUI, I just sensed a little bit over the last couple of years that maybe he needed a fresh start somewhere. And this is some's reading into it just a little bit, and he did so many good things for this franchise off the court as well, and I'm not referring to any of that. I just think on the court, he got a little comfortable taking a back seat, and it was hard to get him to be what I think, I don't know who coined the phrase, it might have even been George, and Chris Denari has repeated it numerous times, but it was IUPUI mode. And that was just, when I can remember the first time I ever heard about George Hill, it was him at Broad Ripple High School, and I was in Terre Haute, and we covered, obviously, the Wabash Valley teams extensively, and so one of those teams was Northview, and I remember Broad Ripple came over to Northview and was like, man, this guy from Broad Ripple's coming over, and he can light up the scoreboard, and I think he had like 59 points in a game. It's like, that's the mindset he had there. That's the mindset he had at IUPUI when he went to the NBA. You can't have that mindset at the Spurs. And he really only had that to me with the Pacers the year that Paul George was out. Other than that, he worked on his defense. He was an excellent defender, but he just kind of blended into the background. Well, it was probably the best thing that could have happened to him in Utah was that Gordon missed the first couple of weeks because George needed to be assertive offensively. And now that he's playing that way, I don't think he'll change.
Yeah, he's established.
Yes. So he's sort of, that's what they expect from him now, and he thinks that that's what he needs to do to succeed there. So back to Jeff, I think even though we had that really good game against the Bulls, I still think the confidence may not be there, but I think it can get there. And everybody I've talked to, last night I talked with assistant coach Bill Baino before the game, and he said something similar that we've heard from a lot of people, is that he's played so many games in the NBA, he will figure it out. And they thought that he'd been playing better defensively, and it was the offense that he just needed the confidence. Now we see the defensive problems and think, well, it has to be a problem in the backcourt. Bill said he thought for the last three or four games, Jeff's played better defensively. So I'm going to take him at his word. I haven't done the defensive breakdowns with the film to say who's causing the problems or what the problems are, but Jeff may not deserve all of the blame for this.
Totally agree. I think I agree with you. I haven't broken down the tape, even looked at point guard numbers or anything like that, but that Chicago game just specifically, Rajon Rondo is a really good point guard, and Rondo didn't kill the Pacers in that game. In fact, he did a pretty good job on Rondo. So I think Teague is going to figure out defensively. It's a scheme difference, trying to figure out how, you know, the Pacers want to fit into things and make his skill set work on the defensive end. I think he's still figuring that out. But all you have to do is Google Jeff Teague stats, and whether you click ESPN or Basketball Reference or whatever, look at his numbers over the last 5 years. They are strikingly similar. It's something like 15 points per game, 7 assists per game, a good shooting average. His three-point percentage has fluctuated. It's always been in the area of usually above average or something along those lines. But he's been a very, very consistent offensive player, and he's played a part of one of the better defenses in the NBA. And again, this is a lot of the same things we were saying last week, but a lot of these storylines have remained from last week. And I think that's good and worth pounding home for – as we look forward here to a couple Philadelphia games, we're
just
literally getting
a little bit of mid-podcast breaking news. So by the time you're listening to this, it won't appear as breaking news to you, but we should clarify some of our earlier statements with this put out by the Philadelphia 76ers in regards to who they will have available for them Wednesday night at the Fieldhouse.
And I'll give you credit for this because I'm looking at your phone that you just handed me. But it looks like Embiid is not going to even make the trip. So, and Okafor is limited. I assume that's in practice. So Okafor is limited. Rodriguez, Henderson, Thompson is probable, but Embiid will not play here on Wednesday. So
the word is load management, so it right. sounds like they have a plan. And he had not been playing extended minutes. They're trying to ease him back into things, and I hate to say that this is already a season that they're not trying to make the playoffs, but the reality is what would be a success for this season for the 76ers is for Embiid to probably play 40 or 50 games to get 100% confidence, to come out of it 100% healthy, and probably get another good draft pick. So they want to win. I can't imagine being on that team or in my position with that team over the last few years. It would have to be frustrating because there have been so many losses. But I respect the patience that they have, so many of them. And this is a smart move because you don't want him. The flashes we've seen, despite the fact the 76ers have not won a game, I feel like every time they play, something comes across Twitter where it's an amazing play from Joel Embiid. So perhaps the Pacers will likely see him Friday night in Philadelphia, but he will not be here in Indianapolis on Wednesday. And just one other thought before we move ahead to maybe big picture games from the month ahead. I think that the one thing that I want to see to possibly lead to some improvement is just a little more fire. I watch practice, and you know, you see a lot in practice, and I've seen them practice really, really hard and show a lot of intensity, but when the going gets tough sometimes in the game, I just am not seeing the exact same thing. And the Pacers just don't right now have that guy that is just going to grab somebody by the collar and say, "Let's do this." And it's hard to do in a constructive manner, and you don't want to necessarily, you know, be a problem when you're leading or when you're trying to fire someone up. But I just want to see a little more intensity during the games because I honestly am seeing it in practice. I saw it in shoot around yesterday. I thought that they had one of the loudest, most intense defensive drill sessions in shoot around yesterday morning, and I just didn't see it during the game. So they're capable. They're not quitting. But they're just getting down a little bit, and then I think sometimes they just get frustrated, and I want to see that frustration turn into positive energy.
You mentioned the frustration of being around the Philadelphia organization, and you understand at least the mindset. Whether or not you agree with it, you understand what they're trying to do. You can see their point. But what's so interesting is they're finally getting Embiid back, but they still can't play him full minutes, and they're not going to play him Wednesday. You've got, Noel hurt, right? You've got Simmons hurt.
Yeah.
And Jahlil Okafor isn't starting. Now that Saric, Dario Saric, who came over, he was drafted a couple of years ago and is now finally over. He's had a nice start. But it's like you look at these early guys that they're drafting. Simmons is out. And
Okafor probably won't play extended minutes.
Right. Noel is out. And Okafor isn't starting. So all of these guys, I'm not saying it wasn't the right move, but it has to be frustrating. You've been drafting high for so long, and only one of these guys right now is starting, and he's on a minutes limit and not even playing on Wednesday because of that. And your number three pick in Okafor 2 years ago, by no means saying he's a bust, but he's not starting. And so you have to wonder, it's a really interesting case study to see how this turns out. I think Embiid looks fantastic, but he's got injury questions. I thought Okafor was a great prospect coming out of Duke, but so far he hasn't blown up like a Miles Turner, Karl Anthony Towns, Kristaps Porzingis. Ben Simmons very well could be very good, but we haven't seen him yet. Nerlens Noel, I don't think he's ever going to be an offensive star, should be a good rim protector, nice player in this league. But there are major what-ifs about all those guys, and they've been doing this for as long as recent memory of any fan, I think, can really remember. You have to go a while back until that season where
they at least have some star power right now, people you'd want to watch, and then somebody like Embiid doesn't come, doesn't dress yeah. or even travel with the team for this game against the Pacers. And I think that's one of the things that maybe owners around the league are upset about is that the Sixers come to town and it's just not a good draw. It's not a team that, you know, people naturally want to go see. And the other thing that I've been frustrated with about the situation is it seems like every year they're making some late acquisition just to get to the salary floor. So I think that's kind of frustrating that they're in the middle of the season and they're still $15, $20 million under the cap. And I don't know the specifics of it right now, but I know they picked up Ersan Ilyasova a week ago. And while they said they really like him and they want him to be a part of their team, you can read between the lines. He's been on four teams, I think, in the last two seasons, and they needed a contract because they gradually have to get back up to the salary floor. There's a minimum a team has to spend on the salary cap, and they are constantly under it. So that's a little bit frustrating. That said, it's a scary game for the Pacers because it's kind of like that September game for a baseball team that's trying to make the playoffs against a bunch of guys that are trying to prove themselves or earn their spot for next year. The 76ers, A, they want to taste victory for the first time this season. Whoever is going to play still has something to prove. And even if you're the Pacers, you still might have human nature to overlook a team, even though you're not playing well, because you think, who are these guys?
No, you're right. And I thought Mark Monteith brought up a really good point on Twitter last night here as we close on Philly. He said he has no question the Pacers will come out and play well on Wednesday. It's at home. They need to come out and play well to avenge that loss and kind of get that taste out of their mouth. But the back-to-back's a really interesting scenario. Let's say the Pacers go out and dominate on Wednesday and have a 25-point win. Then they have to go to Philly, where the Pacers are 0-4 on the road this season. They haven't played well on the road this season. And if you start to get some false confidence,
and look what Philly did last week against Cleveland.
And that road game becomes a major trap, especially because Boston is on Saturday, and everyone could be – not everyone, the team, but the fans, I think, in a lot of ways are looking forward to that Boston game, seeing Boston for the first time. I think that Friday game is potentially really troublesome.
But you'd hope that nobody is thinking about Friday or Saturday.
Here.
In the locker room.
From us, yes. I'm talking analysts, fans,
perspective. Absolutely, we're allowed to. Yeah. But unfortunately, if we're talking about it, you can't help but think that it's probably in the back of the players' minds.
It's human nature.
It is.
It's about how do you ignore that.
Every game I ever played before my playing career came to an end, I probably analyzed who I was getting to play or who I was going to match up against, and oh, we're either a lot better than that team or that's going to be really tough. It didn't go according to plan.
So Boston's on Saturday. We'll briefly look into them. They're 3-3. Their season's been really interesting. They bring in Horford, and they are top of the top in offense and bottom of the bottom in defense. They're dead last in defensive efficiency, and they are third in offensive efficiency, which doesn't really screen Brad Stevens. So it'll be interesting to see how the Celtics pan out. I would be very surprised if they finished the season third to last last. They're dead last in defensive efficiency. I'd be very surprised if they finished there. But that game, when Boston comes here on Saturday, very well could be two teams, Pacers and Boston, who have started disappointingly on the defensive end, both trying to fix it.
It doesn't make any sense. No. They lost Sullinger. Who else did they lose of note? I mean, it seems like it's a lot of the same guys. You add Al Horford. I'm sure there was another player.
They lost Turner, but
Evan Turner. Correct.
But he's not a lockdown
defender. You wouldn't think
defender.
That would make – yeah.
No.
And Emmanuel Mudiay scores 24 points in the first quarter at the TD Garden. Yeah. On Sunday. So, yeah, that'll be interesting. It'll be the decade night, which I know we're all looking forward to as well. So let's move ahead. Let's look at the entire month of November. I think when the schedule came out, there might have been a little bit of concern from some folks in the front office about having so many home games in November because of the schedule challenges it might create later in the season, having more road games. Also, just early in a season, it's during football season. Sometimes fans don't really get into the NBA until maybe after New Year's. So maybe there might have been a little apprehension. But now this comes at a time where this team needs those home games. They need to find some success. They've got 11. Pick three games you're most excited about in the month of November, and let's make a joint pick. There are two that we've got to pick from right off the bat.
Yeah. Warriors or Cavs, and we're going to pick one of the two and then go in other directions with the third one. We debated this a little bit, but Warriors, this is tough. Warriors, Kevin Durant coming in for the first time with them, the natural storylines they bring, or the champs. And not just the champs, but a team that the Pacers at the beginning of the season and still should have in their eyesight for a team that this is the top of the totem pole that we are trying to climb right now. And for me, I think that might push Cleveland over the top. Thoughts?
I would agree. They're the champs, and every time LeBron enters the building, we know the buzz. Now, obviously, the Golden State Warriors come in with Kevin Durant. It's going to be quite an atmosphere. But I don't think it can match what we saw last year, even though Durant's on the team. Remember last season, they came in with that perfect start. And I don't think any Golden State game moving forward, unless it's in the NBA Finals, can kind of match the buzz and the hype that surrounded that appearance in Bankers Life Fieldhouse. And when you've got Cleveland, you've got LeBron, and they're the team that finally has the ring. Now, it's interesting. I just did a quick schedule peek ahead. The Cavs next Tuesday are hosting the Toronto Raptors. And Toronto, I mean, I saw Charlotte last night. So right now, I'd say Charlotte and Toronto are maybe 1 or 2A and 2B in the Eastern Conference. So that'll be a big game for Cleveland. Be interested to see on the second half of the back-to-back what Cleveland does. But that does even make me more excited about it from a Pacers perspective, because I think that if there's any little advantage you could get, assuming those guys play, but maybe they're a little tired, maybe that could benefit them. I'm not as excited about the schedule, how it played out for the Golden State matchup, just because the Pacers are in Oklahoma City the night before. Second half of the back-to-back is against the Warriors. Yeah. There will be no letdown. Obviously, the guys will be fired up for that game. Second half of the back-to-back, third half of the back-to-back. I mean, whenever you play the Warriors, I think the guys are going to be fired up. But it makes me just a little bit less excited about that, and I'm going to go with the game I'm most looking forward to next Wednesday night, Pacers-Cavs.
All right, so that's our group pick. That's pick one of pick three. By the way, if you haven't looked at the schedule, it is ridiculously home-centric in the back half of November. So if you're looking for a few games to come out to, or at least one, end of November is a good time. Mid to end November, we're coming up on it here soon, is a good time to do that. Pick two, my pick here for game that I'm most excited for here in November at Bankers Life Fieldhouse is the Boston game for multiple reasons. A, Al Horford over there is interesting to me. Does that make them an Eastern Conference contender? So far, they've had a lot of the same problems Indiana has, and that their offense has been better than last year, and their defense has been worse. But I want to diverge just a touch. This is my first experience working in and around a marketing department of any kind, and I'm blown away what our marketing department does. You talk about, and the facilities team as well, they go hand in hand to make this work. They're the boots on the ground, if you will. It's amazing how this arena gets decked out to look Hickory six times a year, however many it ends up being. And B, they're going to do this the same style of thing with these decade games, which, if you haven't heard, I think most of you have, but we're going to honor the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, and the 2010s, one game per month throughout the months. We start with 60s decade game. That's the Boston game. It's you get a ticket and you get a Roger Brown bobblehead, so that's free. Every fan in attendance gets one of those, and it comes with the price of admission. Plus, you get to see an interesting team like Boston. And plus, you get to see the arena decked out to look 60s style. There's a lot of really cool things that are going to be a part of that game. The team on the floor and everything that goes with this 60s decade. And just like there was a lot of buzz around that first Hickory game, this first 60s game, decade game, I'm really interested to see. So my pick number two of these three would be that Boston game here coming up this Saturday.
It's a good pick, a good selection, and Boston is probably one of the teams that I like to watch on League Pass when the Pacers aren't playing, a team I like to see. I like the matchups. I like to see Brad Stevens. I like to see Micah Shrewsbury. I like to see Jamie Young, Walter McCarty. I mean, there are so many Indiana connections on the Celtics. They're just a good group to watch. They've been a good group to kind of be around, and it creates for good matchups. And we've seen some good Pacers-Celtics games over the years, so I think that's a good choice. Mine might not be the one that you would have guessed, but when I think back to basketball in November, I think back to days I used to go watch high school games, or when I started playing in high school, and the Wednesday before Thanksgiving was sort of a special time, because it was always the very first high school game of the season. When I played at Peru High School, we used to play in the Huntington Classic, and we would play games on the Wednesday night, and then we would go back on Friday or Saturday for the championship, a four-team tournament. And then I started covering games for local TV stations, and that was always the night we had our first expanded high school basketball show. And so I think of the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, everybody is in the holiday mood. They're looking forward to Thanksgiving dinner the next day, but basketball is on the brain. And so the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, the Pacers have a home game, and it's against the Atlanta Hawks, which I find to be a real interesting matchup because by that point in November, I think we'd like to see Jeff Teague completely healthy, and I look forward to seeing how he will play against the team that he played the first 7 years of seasons of his career. So I'm going to pick the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. The Pacers have the traditional day after Thanksgiving game at home as well, but for a lot of different reasons, I'm looking forward to getting to that week. The Warriors game, I believe, is the Monday of that week, so it'll be a fun week at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, but I can't wait to see where the Pacers are at that point. 7 games in now, you can say it's still early. When you get to Thanksgiving week, I think the team that you've seen at that point is the team that you have, and I wonder what direction they will have gone.
Yeah, I think that's a good marker. I think around Thanksgiving time, you'd like to start seeing your team be the team that you would like it to be. So I think that's a fair line to draw there. Here's how good this schedule is, by the way. We named Pacers-Cavs on Wednesday, November 16th. We named Pacers-Celtics on Saturday, November 12th, and you named Pacers-Hawks on the 23rd of November. Not included in that list. Warriors on Monday, 11/21. We didn't include Clippers, who are come in on the 27th. That's a Sunday, I believe, a 6 o'clock tip. Didn't include the Trailblazers. That's in November. That game's in Portland, but that's still an interesting game.
We didn't say it had to be a home game.
And we didn't include Frank Vogel's return, which is coming up the Monday after the ball. That's how good and interesting this back half of November schedule is. A ton of storylines.
And oh, by the way, on November 18th, the actors and the writer-director from the movie Hoosiers will be honored the first Hickory night of the season against the Phoenix Suns. So it's a fun month of November. I just hope that none of the games go like the last 3 road games, because it's been frustrating for us to work, to watch, and I know it's been frustrating for the fans as well. So I hear the practice going on in the background. I hear
a lot
the
of
sneakers
squeaking. Yeah.
I see some whistles, some loud voices. So they're working to get those corrected, and hopefully what you see on the court, on the television, or what you listen to the radio over the next month, you see some improvement.
Again, 76ers, that is on Wednesday night, 7 o'clock tip. Jeremiah Johnson starts Pacers pregame on the television side at 6:30. Radio as well, 93.5, 1070 in Indianapolis across the Pacers radio network, 6:30. Both of those pregames. Then a home-and-home with the Sixers. Friday, the Pacers go to Philadelphia. Then be back here on Saturday if you're not here on Wednesday, or come to both. Saturday, the Pacers host the Celtics. That is the first decade game, as you mentioned. It's a 60s decade game. There are a few tickets, but I just looked at the ticket site. They're starting to run low. You get a free bobblehead just with coming in. So, all right, we got practice to attend in 6 minutes. We hope this diverted your attention from the election if you wanted that. And we'll look forward to talking to you next week and hopefully over a handful of Pacers wins here later in this week.
All right, shout out to the Reddit fans or the Reddit Pacers.
Yeah, they gave us a shout out back. We can just keep shouting each other back and forth throughout the entire season. All right, that'll wrap it up. We'll talk to you guys next week here on the Sideline Guys.